State Representative Jackie Chan of Quincy is here on this last Wednesday of August 2026. Jackie, yikes.
Yeah, the summer's just about done, Joe, and we know that the end of summer officially, well, unofficially in our minds, really begins after Labor Day. And given how Labor Day is very late this year, it does feel like summer is ending early. And not to feel bad for myself, but and no one should. But I always love the fact when we get into the month of August, people ask me how's been the summer, and I go, well, session didn't end to July 31st.
That's right. My summer just started.
Yeah, it's one of those funny things. And I'm aware that the city councils around the state do end their legislative sessions earlier. But the executive branch offices are still running. It isn't like they get a summer. To be honest with you, the mayors, the town administrators, managers, the governor's people, the secretary of state obviously is very busy this election cycle,
Yes.
as well as the treasurer and the auditor and the AG and so forth, and the district attorneys and the sheriffs and the county treasurers and the county commissioners and et cetera and so forth of all these executive positions, which don't get a recess. And I understand that. We are a 2-year cycle, unlike some of these other folks that are 4 and 6 year cycles. So our campaigning is a little bit different. Hence the council also has a recess during 2 year cycles as well. So there is a little bit of logic, believe it or not, regarding recesses for legislative bodies, because of the nature of the fact that we really never stop campaigning.
That's right. Yeah, and if you don't get reelected, then that would have been your vacation.
That's correct.
Right.
So, and as we talked about before, the committee is still running. We finished a poll on Friday, pursuant to the House Rules Accelerated Deadline process, which just creates more paperwork for us at the staffing and chair level. And the staff continues to send me documentation. And I know I am behind on emails. The staff has pointed out to us that we're having a problem keeping up with end of year results. Obviously, we have constituent issues. I had at least two on Monday that was brought up by my staff, a very complex issue. I can't discuss the constituent case.
Course, yeah.
But the it turned out to be much more complicated as we're sitting around for a few hours brainstorming ways to solve this. And as long as I ever do this job, I always will be caught off guard by another constituent case I've never seen before, or this fact pattern I've never seen before, which results in us spending quite a bit of time sitting here trying to find the appropriate answer of whether or not we can provide assistance or find the right person to help provide assistance.
Yeah, which is, that's really the core of your job, right?
Yeah, I've been asked this question before about the nature of a state rep job and how much is a constituent service versus attending events and versus policy making. Policy making includes public hearings and going to formal sessions and so forth. And seriously, guys, it's over 70% constituent services. It really is. And good reps and senators, actually will monitor those constituent services and participate. And if necessary, we call the executive branch membership ourselves. It's a whole, you got to know when to call and when not to call.
Sure.
We do get probably maybe 5+% on city issues, which we refer down to the city, maybe much less than that on federal issues, but we do get them like immigration, Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare that isn't part of mass health issues, IRS issues, that isn't Department of Revenue. We ship those off to the federal offices as well. We get a small smattering of those things. And then obviously we get avocation on my level on federal issues, which we kind of stare at and like we have really no jurisdiction. So we're trying to figure out an appropriate response, even though these advocate groups and constituents may insist that we have jurisdiction. And then events really are about 10 to 15% of the 70%. So it really depends on the time of year. And some days, is very busy on local events as well as state house events. And of course, as chair the Asian caucus, sometimes I roam outside the city. And that leaves you about 15% really having time to work on public policy. And you all think that, 15% isn't that much time your day. Well, in terms of my ability to focus, it's about 15%. But the reality is that, in terms of time consumption, it's probably about 40% of my time, when you consider it as the hearings, maybe 60% of my time when you consider it's out, when you consider administrative work in the office.
Yeah, and a lot of
So.
times it's constituents don't really know, what their who covers their issue, so they reach out to the first person they think of.
That's right. And so, as you can tell, it's kind of a mindscape component of like how much attention that, I have to give to certain things, events, public policy and constituent services. And then there's also the time component. How much time am I spending on each one? That becomes a really hard question, because, as you know, we've had all night legislative sessions. I've done 3 hour hearings in my young days. I did 12 hour hearings. There's dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of meetings per week, depending on the subject matter going on. We get triple booked, and the staff have to cover some that I can't cover because we're triple booked some days. And then, of course, I do try to get to high school graduation. I do try to get to Chowder Fest. I do try to get to August Moon. I do try to get to Christmas Parade and Flag Day, but also Eagle Scouts, PTO fundraisers, and so forth. And in case you are wondering, I do make I'll say a lot, but I mean, I do make donations from my campaign account to a number of local organizations. Ranging from everything from high school soccer boosters, all the way to senior stay out nights, to QCAP, to the HouseNet Community Council and various events there. The Scouts, Troop 6 particularly, they'll ask me for donations target very specific trips they're looking to do. And the list goes on regarding various nonprofit agencies that service Quincyan. Given the fact that, even though I'm only a portion of the city, the reality is that it doesn't matter where the service agency is located in whose district, they service the whole city, including people in my part that I represent. So, why would I donate to a service that's geographically outside my area in Quincy? It's not because it has to be in my district, it's because they serve the whole city.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. And you're the second Norfolk district in particular is so unique because it's all self-contained within the same community.
It is. A lot of cities these days have a city plus one or two suburban communities. And you don't see a lot left. Like you find a couple, like one of the reps in Lowell, I believe, is completely contained in the city. You have like a small number of Boston reps in Kilkenny, can you say? I think half of them are contained in the city. Worcester, you have, that's a 240,000 person city. It's a big city, Worcester. So, you have a couple of them contained in the city. I think you have one contained in Worcester. So yeah, it's same with the senators. Very few actually are contained entirely in one area. And even though Worcester's 240 and you have 160 person to be in a part of a Senate district, I believe the two senators in Worcester actually have suburban communities as well. They split the city and they have some suburban communities as part of their Senate district. So the days when the bigger urban centers had enormous statehouse power because of the fact that, senators and reps were completely contained in their big cities is long, 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 long gone now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Suburban communities have a lot to say in statehouse politics.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, a good example here in Quincy, right? The Norfolk and Plymouth. So at Norfolk, Plymouth, it's two different counties.
That's right. And those are the days of Senator Parr Howard and the early days of Senator Michael Morrissey. It wasn't Plymouth County. It was one time, I think it was Quincy, Braintree, Holbrook, Avon. And
That sounds right.
I think that was the early district back in like 19, before 1992. So we're talking about late 80s.
So things have changed as the population grows,
Yeah, and then people may remember Brian Donnelly was a congressman in the old days. That came out of Dorchester, and there was really this kind of Dorchester, Quincy, very, very contained, small congressional district until that was lost in the 1990, I believe,
Sounds
census
right.
that we lost a Congress seat.
In the federal census,
Yeah, I think it went from, was it 11 to 10?
That sounds right. Exactly.
So again, before my time, I was in high school.
So, and now we're down to, I think,
Nine.
nine.
Yeah, we were very lucky. The last redistricting, despite COVID and 50,000 to even more than 50,000 students weren't in the state at the time during COVID in 2020, we were still able to maintain a congressional seat. And the population in the state still showed a very tiny growth, but there was a little bit of growth. So people are not aware, and we're ways off from the U.S. Census. It is where you're residing when the census forms come out, not where you claim your domicile. So
Yes,
the
right.
student and population being here during the time of census release, claim here for the purpose of census release, not claiming domicile.
Yeah, be curious to the 2030 census will be interesting. There's been talk of, out migration from Massachusetts to other parts of New England and other parts of the country, so be curious to see.
Well, we talked about this before regarding property, right? New York City is an example was trying to rein in people migrating out of New York City by imposing kind of crazy ass taxes regarding whether or not you're using your home in New York as a second home, as a primary home. And let's put aside a public policy on that. There is, even in the higher end bracket, there is a shortage of houses. And if you're holding on to your home while you're claiming migration out of the state for tax purposes, if you're a taxpayer that's a single homeowner, like pretty much all of us in Quincy, and someone is trying to defraud the state on taxes by claiming a second home, by staying, 6 months and one day, but are they really staying 6 months and one day, but didn't sell their home here? Not selling your home here adds to the housing crisis.
That's right.
And again, it's your home. You can do what you want with it. But I mean, you're now, let's say, are a contributor because you claim you're not living in Massachusetts, but you hold property in Massachusetts, so you don't create a vacancy of homes. Which is why I find this migration story a little bit perplexing, because
That's a little misleading. True.
and the second one I think is that certain states that have a large immigrant population, because it's not your citizen status, it's any person that's physically in your state is counted by census, ignoring the whole very first constitutional issue regarding certain peoples on if they're people, which we resolved after the Civil War. It's going to have some adverse effect on particularly, I think, states along the Mexican border, whether or not they're going to see actually growth. And people may not realize, but a lot of immigrants who come here actually have larger families than people that have been here for generations.
Yes, that's right, exactly. Seeing as we're on the topic, I guess we should talk about the trade dispute erupted this week between the US and Canada.
This is not surprising. At all of me. The Canadian position needs to be stronger, and I'm not trying to take Canada's side. And here's the reason I say that. Last time out, in Trump's first administration, the Mexicans went first, and they set the bar against the Canadians. And you can see what I'm going here with this trade negotiation, where first one out of the gate sets the bar for the other one. And Canada didn't get the deal they really would have liked, because they came in second. And Canada, from their negotiations, what needs to come out of the gate first to prevent Mexico from setting the bar of the United States. Local politics being local politics, as we all appreciate, I hope, listening to this, their local politicians are under immense pressure to stand up to the United States and try to also protect their own economy as well. And if they don't, they will not survive an election up there. So while some folks are listening, going, bad mouthing Canadians, perhaps because of whatever reason, won't question the reasoning. You have to be respectful of democratic countries, because their electorate has expectations. That is not your expectations, as we sit here in my dining room talking to you. So I'm not surprised at all at this. There's obviously a degree of gamesmanship here. I don't believe anybody's speaking points at this point on both sides, as they're really catering to their the electorate. Be mindful of that. They're always catering to their electorate. We'll see how the fall goes here. The current agreement, is kind of still in play. But I mean, you also got like these crazy things that are statements out there that are purely distractions. And all it does is incite other folks for reasons that are unnecessary.
It does, yeah. It's the online rhetoric is just unbearable right now.
Well, even on the administration side, there's a lot of rhetoric that's truly unnecessary. The theater continues to try to play to certain folks here that eats this stuff up. Frankly, the vast majority of folks, in my experience, is always interested in people getting the job done.
It has implications here in Massachusetts and other border states, though, for sure.
Canada is our number one or two trading partner, depending on the year we're talking about. For the most part, it's number one. Canada is our largest tourist import state. A lot of Canadians come down here. England and China make up as the next group. But obviously, the Chinese relationship has made it more difficult on things like visas to the United States. And the strong dollar hurts us, obviously, at some level. But the dollar is weakening in kind of a not a right way right now because of the bond market, which is complicated to discuss. Canada is very important to us as a trade partner. It's a one and two situation, or one number one or number two on both that and tourism. And given the fact Canadians have not been vacationing or engaging in property purchases or other type of cross-border purchasing power, especially on border states, but no, this is very detrimental. And given the fact we live in Quincy, we're what 900 to 1,000 miles from many of the borders of Canada, we don't see the economic impacts on the US border communities from the lack of Canadians coming over to shop.
Right. Yeah. And what hasn't been talked about is a lot of hydroelectric power comes from Canada.
Hydro-Quebec is really a lifeline, not just for New England and Massachusetts, but also right across the border
That's
states.
right. Yep.
Ontario is also a major natural gas exporter, as well as hydro. The Ontario Premier, which is their governor, I believe, or do they call them governors? I think they're
I
called.
think they do. Yeah.
Ford is a character.
Yes.
If you're not had a chance to see Governor Ford, please go on YouTube and look at it. He's a
Yes.
character.
Yes, for sure.
So if you like that kind of character, I'm sure you enjoy the governor
He's
or
very
whatever.
colorful. Yes.
He is straight to the point of the matter. He
Yes.
doesn't mince words. So, I think this will continue for several months. A lot of gamesmanship, and see what happens. And you are wondering how it affects you. Well, lumber is a big part. Your home building prices, whether you're building a deck or a home or a fence, the wood's going to go up in price at some level. Automobiles will go up again because a lot of cross part manufacturing between the two areas. A lot of car parts keep, like in Mexico, keeps crossing back and forth the line. Every
Yes.
time it moves back and forth, a tariff is put on it.
Yeah.
So
And American vehicles are many are assembled in Canada.
they are. So that's what I mean by part movement. So people think tariffs are one and done. No, it's every time it crosses a border. So part A is assembled in let's say in Michigan, goes over to Canada for assembly part B, then comes back over again, but there's one tariff, and it goes back a third time to the car. Then it comes back again, there's a second tariff. So, it's the only way you can truly get taxed multiple times is through a tariff system. Unlike other taxation in this country, which is pretty much almost all cases one and done, a tariff actually can tariff on top of a tariff on top of a tariff, back and forth, which adds to your bottom line of what you're paying for.
It's ex exactly to be passed on, to be the point where an inexpensive vehicle is gonna cost $50,000 by the time it's done.
Yeah, you're going to see dairy prices go up on dairy products, maybe not in Massachusetts as much. But some states are going to see some serious dairy product price increases. So
Beef
that's going
prices, of course.
you're going to get beef price increase over beef price or beef shortage because of screw flies and other issues going around the beef industry, which the United States has spent a lot of time to prevent screw fly infections. And I hope Congress at some point does an investigation on how come screw flies made it into the United States. This is major. Security issue on keeping screw flies in Central America and never crossing into Mexico. So I hope Congress, some point, somebody in Congress realizes that there's a problem here, but it truly is a national security issue because of the fact that it affects our food supply.
That's right. Yes,
So
exactly.
somewhere along the way, the administration screwed up on this issue and causes massive infestation, particularly in cattle country. So and what does it mean for U.S. folks? I mean, liquor in particular is the first one hit. Hard spirits are going to get heavily tariffed going over the border in particular. And that's going to really hurt the alcohol industry. And hard liquor is a big part of our tax structure because of excise taxes. It's one of the oldest taxes we have is excise tax on alcohol.
Interesting. Yeah. So I think it's important to point out these haven't really gone into effect. This is all talk at the moment.
Some have gone into effect over the weekend, but the vast majority is still
Right.
kind of at a pending moment. The Canadian tariffs, mostly won't take effect until September 8th.
Right.
The Trump administration is starting slapping stuff right away through the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But a ripple effect is remind folks like the situation in Iran and the lack of fertilizer in the United States will have a ripple effect as the harvest season begins now into the fall period. So I don't exactly understand which agricultural products are in shortage this fall, but you're going to see something. We're heavily tariffing a lot of products, agricultural products coming out of South America. So if you like mangoes, they're out of South America, and you're wondering how good the price went up. And they never lowered the price of Madagascar vanilla. And bakers have been upcharging you because the price of vanilla.
Yes, our a bottle for $25 at the grocery store. Like, why?
Even the cheap extracts, the extracts, very expensive was, and the paste is much more expensive.
Yes.
And then an artificial vanilla, is where to be at the moment.
Yeah, it, which is fine for baking, but it's not good for other purposes. So
And we're living in a society where everyone's trying to get away from artificial flavors as well. So, it does create a financial challenge for some folks at home, right? Whether or not you will go back to artificial flavors.
Next Monday, no, next Tuesday is the state primary, Jackie.
It is. The primaries are, there is no Democratic primaries in Quincy. There's one in Milton for state Senate and state rep race. There's one in Canton because Rep Galvin is leaving. So there's a few Democratic primary races on both open and challenged seats in our neighboring communities. Obviously, you guys have seen the big ones are Seth Moulton, Ed Markey. You have the seven people running in the Seth Moulton seat, which is really looks like it's down to Cole, Wynn, Betcham, and maybe Belsito on the outside. It's really down to, seems to be four front runners. And then you have the Sununu Pappas race in southern New Hampshire. And if you watch the 6 o'clock news like I do on local television, you're getting pounded on New Hampshire commercials.
Seems like every other one,
Yeah, it's because the Southern New Hampshire local media is the Boston media channels.
Right, that's right.
As you guys know, the bigger audience you have in your media outlet, the more you can charge for commercials.
That's right.
So New Hampshire races on statewide races are very expensive because they have to access the Boston media market.
Exactly, yeah. And of course, locally, the Norfolk DA's race is attracting a lot of
Oh
interest.
yeah, how
And
did I forget that one?
how'd you forget that one,
Yeah,
Daggy?
there's a lot.
In the 8th district race as well.
Yeah, that's right. And you got Steve Lynch and Prash Roth. I did attend a debate a couple of weeks back, which I really enjoyed watching. I don't want to get disparaging on anyone's campaigns. I've been around a lot of campaigns and learned a lot from watching other people's campaigns too. And it's interesting. I've never seen this many third party PAC, independent DC PAC. Or you may seen some attack ads on Lynch coming to your mailbox, and they're actually a Washington DC PAC when you look at the corner of where it's paid for and what union shop printed. It wasn't a Massachusetts union shop that printed those pieces. Social media is a big part. YouTube ads are a huge part of it. I've seen a lot of YouTube ads for Steve Lynch, Pat Rorath, Seth Moulton, and Ed Markey, because you can target your social media ads into zip codes specifically to reach targeted audiences. Although I had a friend who used DirecTV and has a bleed over from the Moulton seat back
Interesting,
congressional
interesting.
race. So there's sometimes a little bleed over. If you depending what media you're watching, the Google TV or direct TV or something else from someone
Right.
in this district. It's really been one of the more nasty primaries I've seen in a very long time
Yeah.
under congressional level. And a little bit of the Norfolk County DA's race. And Quincy has not been too nasty, but I've heard from some other part of the counties. I won't name names, but there is clearly some more attacking each other. The district in the Moulton district definitely had a lot more mudslinging at the bottom end of the polling, trying to hit up the top end of the polling. And also
Right.
endorsements was fascinating. The Boston Globe in particular endorsed Moulton and Roth and Trom Wynn, interestingly.
Huh.
Yeah, most of us had pegged Dan Cole because he is the insider's insider. Like,
Right.
that's how he's campaigning. He's literally campaigning as the outsider, insider, family man who comes from wealth,
Yeah.
pretending to be a everyman guy in his ads. And I'm surprised that he didn't get the Globe endorsement. I was very surprised by that.
It'll be interesting, that's for sure. And early voting is going on now, then in-person voting on Tuesday. And then we'll start to see all the ads for the, what, nine ballot questions?
Yeah, we'll start a schedule in late September because I'll be vacationing. We might get one more conversation between us before I go on vacation.
Yeah.
But the we'll do maybe try to do two a week.
Yeah.
You set up the schedule for that and the ballot questions.
Okay. Yeah. I think that'd be good, actually, because I think people have a lot of questions, myself included. I'm still waiting for the Secretary of State's summary booklet to come out to really explain them to me.
Oh, the thing's going to be like a college textbook is going to be
It's
so
going to be thick. Yes.
kind of thick. Yeah, he's required to print the original bill,
Right. Which can be very wordy.
which is going to be extremely wordy.
Yeah.
I don't envy voters in having to decipher this stuff. We can pick another day to debate, where the ballot questions, ability to get on the ballot accessibility is getting too weak or not. And we already had this conversation about how ballot questions have really changed over the course of 30 years, and my observation of how they're run, how they're put together, and just ways of how to pay for the stuff. It's quite amazing how things have changed over the last 30 years of my life watching this carefully. So that's we can come back to that conversation at a different day. But in the
Yeah.
meantime, obviously, we encourage people to vote whether early at City Hall and or you go to the ballot box on September 1. Despite the Supreme Court's ruling, mixed ruling, by the way, ignored a headline, very confusing ruling about mail-in ballots by the president's executive order. At the moment, you still can mail in your ballot, and you are able to also deliver your ballot at City Hall directly as well, if you're concerned. And Secretary Galvin has been encouraging people to do direct delivery at
Yep.
the box at City Hall, or just drop it physically at the clerk's office.
That's right.
I'll give
Yep.
even more ample time to request a mail-in ballot and receive a mail-in ballot. The thing I have a concern with, well, there's two things observations I'll give. One is that on the campaigns themselves, and especially up in the 8th congressional district, the Moulton seat, is that there's the desire to be perceived as the front runner, so don't bother with the rest. Interesting psychology here in campaigns where if you continue to portray yourself as the leader, and that's what they all seem to be trying to do up there,
Sure.
that voters will go with the leader because why wouldn't you not?
Follow the leader, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a psychological thing, right?
Yeah.
Trying to induce by marketing your
Right.
psyche. You have the opposite, the contrarian component, trying to induce a contrarian opponent where they're saying, well, this guy's leading, but you don't have to follow the lead. You don't follow second or third place person trying to convince you to follow them instead. And then it's interesting when you have multiple people at the same time trying to demonstrate that they are all the leader
Right.
to try to again induce you to go with the leader in voting. The second issue is actually pretty fascinating too that I'm observing is that. In the case of the Trump administration trying to discourage mail-in ballots in particular, they don't like early voting either, by the way, but particularly mail-in ballots, is that, if you're unable to continue to repeat over and over again, as we've seen, not necessarily with the Trump administration, but also just a plain marketing issue. If you can repeat over and over again, you start to believe what you hear because
Yeah,
you
it's
hear
true. Yeah.
multiple times. Sarah Palin, for example, cannot see Alaska from her window, and she never made that statement. That was Tina Fey in Saturday Night Live, but
That's
repeated
right.
over and over and over
Yep.
that comedy skit that people started to believe it was real, right? The same thing here. If you say fraud, 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 then you believe it's real and appeals that negative component of your psyche, right? And sadly, in the case of Sarah Palin, again, she is still a human being. If you're poorly about the way she was treated, I don't agree with her politics. But I mean, it's unfair that people would just assume that she was like that a skit by Tina Fey,
Right.
right? So,
Yeah, just think for yourselves, folks. Do your own homework. The information is more readily available about candidates today than it ever has been. It's at your fingertips.
and also just don't buy into the rhetoric, right? Just kind of take a deep breath, step back, and tune out the whole whether I'm a front runner, a motif, I'm a contrary motif, or the fact that you hear the same words over and over again. If you start believing that everything we hear repeated constantly, you start to get caught into that thought process that takes away your ability to think independently on your own. And we all
That's
have
right.
natural biases. I mean, it's just
It's human nature, right?
it's how we're designed. So that's the part about that. So like I said, the Supreme Court ruling, on certain media says win, the other ones say mixed win. It's very confusing out there. The bottom line is, the court did not enforce the injunction because the implementation process has not been revealed.
Right. And as I understand it, that the U.S. Constitution gives states rights how to run their own elections.
That's right. This could still be ruled against the president in the end.
Yeah.
However, the court basically said that just because you filed an executive order with no implementation explanation, until the implementation explanation is implementing, you don't file an injunction until something actually exists.
Yeah, you literally would need an act of Congress to amend the Constitution.
Well, you actually answered two questions at once. And the first, right, it's regarding state rights. We run elections.
Yeah.
We control all that stuff by constitution. The second question is regarding mail-in ballots and whether that the president has the power to determine how mail-in ballots are managed by
Okay.
the
Yep.
post office,
Okay.
of which the executive order requires a greater degree of data collection on us
Right.
regarding verification of identity on mail-in ballots, which I find kind of interesting because I'm not sure how that would work, but they don't. No one really knows how it would work. The post office hasn't revealed how it's going to work, even though they're trying to figure out how to make it work. Once you know how to make it work, then you can go to court and file an injunction against it. Given its late stage going to November election, it is very unlikely that the court will interfere with an election. And the Supreme Court historically avoids direct election questions. So people have speculated like, well, they stopped the injunction arguing that it hasn't matured because you haven't seen any concrete plan yet on implementation because it's still kind of in formation in certain ways. You're not there yet. On the other side, the argument is executive order in itself is an execution, meaning the plan is already there in the order. So you don't need to wait for the executive branch officers to actually come up with the plan. So it's kind of an interesting dual argument here. Trying to get the post office to cross-reference identification of mail-in ballots, which I'm not sure how that would work. They're using Homeland Security information, but they can't get voter data easily from us. And how do you know who's who and all that? I don't know how the post office has the administrative ability to do that level of work when most of us can't get our mail within a reasonable time period.
Very true. Yes.
I mean, let's be frank about it, guys. If you still mail bills like myself, they're either getting there in 3 days or 13 days.
Yeah, it's true.
And I've been, I extended the time period for myself. So the expectation is that post office can do this voter identification on top of their job, which they have trouble doing right now. So I have no idea how this is going to
It
play
would
out.
need a creation of a whole division within the U.S. Postal Service, which, I mean, they're.
You actually hit on the head. That is what's going on. And so I'm not, again, I'm not entirely clear how this would work. I'm just giving you the outsider view on this on this matter. And you're right, the states run the elections, but the Postal Service is a quasi-independent entity that's controlled by the federal government. And it's always been quasi-independent since Ben Franklin. And very rarely does a president engage itself directly into the operations of the post office other than making appointments to the board and the board selecting generally the president's pick to be postmaster general.
Okay. Well, we'll wait on that because there's really this because this it's all talk and no policy at the moment, so we'll wait on that.
Oh, don't get disturbed. Don't get discouraged by a headline to
Well,
participate
right.
in early voting. That's what I'm trying to get at the end. Bottom line, ignore the news about this executive order and execute your right to vote. And just because the headline says one thing, and I do blame the media for this, the headlines does not help the public to execute.
Well, people miss when reports are made about things like this, people miss words like could happen, might happen, would happen. They just assume it is happening when it's
Well,
really all speculation.
and that's the headline, and that's what the meme becomes in terms of folks taking screenshots off their websites and their phones, and they post that and that only. They may apply a link in their social media, and of course, the social media algorithm kicks in, and the whole thing moves to the chain in the system, arguing specific folks where that headline would appeal to.
Sometimes my issue is more with headline writers than the reporters because they're two different aspects of journalism.
You're absolutely right. And the headline is what most of us will have in our memory
That's right.
more than anything else.
It's all
And
about
that,
marketing. It's all about how you sell it.
yeah, and I'm very troubled by this on the headlining. Because again, that's your first impression of the article. It is most likely memorable part they're gonna remember of the article. And how you perceive news will be driven by the headline.
Yeah, it definitely matters. Yeah, absolutely. Should we talk about the economy a little bit?
Sure.
Okay.
We a PCE data came out, personal consumer expenditures, and more PCI data and unemployment data is on the way on Fridays. And Jackson Hole's around with the Federal Reserve Bank, and you've heard about this whole U.S. Treasury buying bonds, even though Secretary Bessett hated it when Secretary Yellen did it during the Biden administration. They're
That's
basically doubling
right.
up on what they did during the Biden administration. And why does it matter to you? A few things. Inflation's sticky. It's about 3.3% year over year. We're far from the 2% target. I think we got as far as like 2.7 a couple of times, which means it's high. Wage inflation is the next data I'm looking for, because if wages don't exceed inflation, you're losing money. Very
That's right.
simple. Same thing with interest rates. If you're on a high yield savings and you're saving a percentage interest does not exceed the interest inflation number, you're losing money.
That's right.
This is very simple math.
That is,
And you've seen all the storylines about the 10-year bond and the 30 and 20-year bond yields, which is a tradable market commodity. It is not strictly a government issue. Only the short-term rates between 2 and 1 month are government rate driven by the Federal Reserve interest rate setting. The rest of them are driven by the derivative market as well as the bond trading markets. And at 5.1, 5.2%, which I use as a general rule, just add 2%. And that's what most loans would be like for that length of time. And in 20, 30 years, your home mortgage loans. So you're looking 7%, give or take 0.5%, depending on the. So it is very expensive. Not as bad as my father's day.
Oh, it was 18% in the 80s,
Yeah, we're not as bad as my father's day, but it is something we're not used to because we've been used to low interest rates. Since the great financial crisis. Interest rates is still over 5% when I got out of college in 1995. And I was paying 8% on student loan, variable rate when I got out of college in 1995. So it is not the most brutal thing you've seen in the last 30, 40 years, but it is still very high in recent memory. So it's and combined with high home prices, it just compounds it. So why that's why it matters to you to watch these long yields, particularly interest in car loans. If you're a business, short-term equity regarding the one to 1-month, 1-year rate if you're looking for rolling lines of credit as a business, and also your credit cards. Those are the short rates. And of course, the long rates regarding long-term investments, whether it be in private industry, building homes, or need to install like a huge capital equipment for industrious or homeowner, or you're taking home equity on your loan for, maybe building a deck. I have no idea, whatever you need
Sure. Yeah.
for. And those rates do matter to you. And but I remind folks, the federal government only has the Federal Reserve Bank only has some influence on the 1 year below. 2 years and above, it gets trickier, and everything 10 years above is really out of anybody's control. It's subject to rates. Historically speaking, when bond yields are up, it means that stock prices go down. That's not really happening exactly. So it's causing a lot of non-historical accuracy, I think is the way to put it, because it's like roulette. Start past historical is not necessarily indicative of future returns, and this is a
That's right.
classic case of that. And then we, there's a lot of delayed effects, like I talked about earlier. And the bond market is also reflective of the confidence of the economy. Your U.S. debt is now $40 trillion. As you can hear just on my voice, even I'm like really appalled here. Generally, you should keep your bond debt under 100% of GDPs. It's where it gets really scary, and we're like 130% of GDP. So we are the biggest economy on the planet, but I think we're at 32 or 35-ish trillion, depending on who you want to talk to. But the bond is 40 trillion and climbing. That you can't argue with about statistics. So the federal government, especially under this administration, has outspent. And this administration is actually fascinating because they ran on debt reduction twice. And COVID, there's a COVID effect, and other stuff, which we understand why there was extended spending. But the first this time, first time around in 4 years, administration spent $4 trillion, and a good piece of that was in the second half addressing COVID,
Sure.
the well the beginnings of COVID, but yeah, it's still COVID, and that moved into the Biden administration. It's Biden basically continued the first administration's continued debt spending,
Right.
initial COVID. This administration has already spent $4 trillion in less than 2 years. So they added $4 trillion to debt in under 2 years. They may be the biggest debt inducer since World War II if they continue when you account for inflation of World War II. So, the last time we've hit such high levels was in World War II because of war spending.
And now we have another war to spend on.
Yeah, it's not as wide-ranging as World War II.
Right.
The cost of doing business in war is very expensive for the United States, especially when we use the best technology on the planet, and the best technology with the planet comes with a big price tag.
Right.
And it takes time. Patriot missiles can take upwards of 3 years, sometimes half the time if they really accelerate, if they get able to get the parts to be able to accelerate. And they can run, five plus million dollars, and the subject to cost of the parts. So I think the media reporting on things like Patriot missiles and Tomahawk missiles and other types of munitions may be a bit of a low ball, because if you've seen the tariff issue is a big problem, not necessarily for you and I as a consumer, but also for defense spending, because they have to pay the tariff on various goods and moving back and forth as well.
Yeah, and they means us.
You, in the end, as a taxpayer, you're
That's right.
100% correct. And it's I'm not a military expert, but just some guy watching this, I just scratch my head, like, what is going on here, right? I hope I'm not the only one, just kind of like, just some person, scratching the head too. I'm just not, what is going on there? Just don't get it. But yeah, I mean, those folks who support this president on debt reduction and no wars, obviously, we've seen in news. I don't have to state this as personal opinion. The news will report that there's a lot of division of his supporters regarding his most recent actions this year. And if he does continue the pace of $4 trillion in less than 2 years, you could, seriously see him spending even more, 8 more or $10 trillion And to be honest with you, not to be mean, but the man's 80. I mean, the rest of us are going to be picking that price tag.
Oh boy. And we haven't even talked about energy costs.
If you're in Quincy, definitely go for the municipal aggregated rate. If you just
Yes.
move into the city, you have time to get onto the system. You will save money because the price of energy continues to be variable and rising. And as we hit the winter months, natural gas is a big part of our energy and heating supply. And we do prioritize heating over electrical generation. Just to remind folks, this is a home heating priority state when it comes to natural gas. So if we don't have enough natural gas for our power, local power plants here because it prioritizes homes, we have to buy it from outside, which adds even more cost to your electric bill because you're doing short-term bids and trying to get electricity in from surrounding areas. So, the rising costs of electricity will probably be, well, let's put this, the variable rising cost, because it's always fluctuating around, will probably continue until there's a settlement on global energy prices regarding natural gas and fossil fuels. And we've talked about this before. A lot of infrastructure around Middle Eastern countries over there is all banged up really badly. And whether it be fertilizer, aluminum, or natural gas or oil, and it takes time for that stuff to be repaired safely, and then back export it. And a lot of natural gas and oil has already reaching destination now, and being processed, and then those countries in the global market will have another price shift based on what the demand is, given the fact there's going to be a shortage. Nothing's going into there. Almost nothing's going into the Gulf. Everything is coming out or trying to get out. No one wants to get trapped on the other side.
That's right.
I think all of you be very understanding in the war zone that your ship goes in, it doesn't come out, and you're the crew on that ship. And do you really want to be trapped on the other side?
Did the municipal aggregation tacky, is that available to every community in the state?
Every community has the ability to go through a process of municipal aggregation. It requires the municipality actually do the due diligence, research, and study, and get bids on competitive energy supply companies, and then lock into a contract of which everyone's automatically in. You have to choose to get out. You have to choose your own sources. Because in Quincy, you have three choices, what price you want, and then you're fixed into this price for that period of time. Early communities like Lowell has been enjoying that since the days of deregulation of energy back in the early 2000s. Some places like Quincy took a lot longer to implement starting last year in terms of getting a product to you. It takes a couple of years for people to go through the process locally. So it is something that is strongly encouraged by all of us for municipalities to go through the process to see if they can get a better bid price. But mind you, it is an average issue. So sometimes the basic rate and the competitive rate may be lower than what you're paying, and sometimes it'll be higher. So you have to remember this is an average. You're looking at the long term regarding the total price of which you'll be looking to pay, not the day of. And I think that's what people can confuse by.
But what, okay. So, but that's locked in though, right? Once you enter into that contract.
The energy price is locked in. Municipality, in this case, Quincy is locked into the energy price. So no, I encourage it. And remember, this is an average. So in the long average, you should do better on the variable rate, which is done every 6 months by the two big utility companies, National Grid and Eversource. Right about now, they're starting the bid process during a time of high energy markets. So right now, if I'm correct, National Grid and Eversource is going to probably have a higher 6 month rate than what you're getting on free market competitive supply, as well as aggregation. Because the current, as we just mentioned, the current situation in the Gulf, and that may change if peace out and suddenly oil flows easily again. You may see a reduction in the 6 month rate on the utility companies, and you won't have spikes because of shortages, and maybe it'll get lower than this aggregate rate. So see here, it's we because there's only thing compared to. So that's why I tell folks it's not necessarily just to, you can't look at it today price. You have to come look in the long term. long term, it should be a savings because the long term in this case, I think, is just under 2 years.
Okay. All
Under
right.
3 years, under 3 years. I'm trying to
3 years.
remember months. I think it's
All
like
right.
7 months. I'm trying to remember right now. Someone will correct me later.
Okay.
Someone will always correct me. It's just how it works.
Let's hope for a warm winter.
Yes.
Yes.
One more to be very helpful, all our practical. So 100% correct.
Yes, exactly. You are still accessible for folks, right?
Yeah, the state house is open. As you can tell, I do talk to my staff regularly. They left me a stack of emails I have to review to this afternoon when I'm done with you. It's 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370. We an audit if the person at the desk doesn't take your pickup, it's an automated system. Wait, I'm after Kathy Ninatra. So it's her suite. She's a rep that runs the suite. So just hit anybody, we'll get the voicemail. We have a Tacky Chan, Tackey dot chan at mhouse.gov, tacky.chan@mhouse.gov. Please feel free to email and drop a line. We also have a contact page through tackychan.org, which is a resource page. Please feel free, you can use that contact page as well and look at some phone numbers. And we've been changing that phone numbers. For example, Social Elder Services is really not going to be around too much longer, it sounds like. Old caller needs the replacement, so we're going to update our contact information on something like that. State Representative Tacky Chan on Facebook. We should have the August moon pictures up. You can see me sweating away with tacky fans. And try to put some memes up. I discovered pictures do better than words in terms of communication by trial and error about some hopefully various important informations that we get from state agencies. We have an Instagram that goes with that, MELegislature.gov, MELegislature.gov. I'm a bit honest, right? This is a quiet August, not a lot going on, but the informal sessions are very short and you can watch them online and see how short they are. Because it's really us getting ready for the primaries on Tuesday. So as I won't lie to you about that. But you can look up bills, see where things are, and people get to try to advocate for bills to try to get out during informal sessions, unanimous consent. As you can imagine, unanimous consent is not as easy as it sounds.
Right.
We're here with Joe every 1 or 2 weeks, although we're going to take a hiatus in September, as we're both going to be doing some time off.
Yes.
Got a question for Joe. We don't care what it is anymore. QATV@QATV.org, QATV@QATV.org. Send us a question about anything in life. If a listener or viewer dislikes that topic you presented, well, good for you.
That's right. That's correct. Yeah, either way.
Yeah, but we do welcome feedback and we do welcome topic matters. As we mentioned many times, it doesn't have to be about politics. It can be as simple as cooking recipes or what movie I saw most recently, or
Whatever.
even family, personal family life questions you may want to ask. As I've had some, I've lived through different tragedies myself on
Yeah.
family level. Again, everyone's different. I don't often share those experiences, but if you want to hear some of that too, I'm more than happy to share some of those things about my life that you may want to know about. Or Joe's, you can ask Joe. I mean, is
Yeah,
it?
I mean, we'll keep folks' identities anonymous, certainly, but we'll talk about the topic for sure.
Exactly. So I mean, we welcome any topic matter because I think having a conversation or some variety that doesn't always have to be about politics and campaigns and public policy, can good insight about the people like the two of us engaging with here. Like, it doesn't hurt to learn about either of us on things the public might be interested in.
Yeah, or we could learn from them, I'm sure. So, absolutely, either way.
Yep.
We'll try and catch up next Wednesday after the election, Tacky.
Yeah, we'll see if we can get one more post election debriefing. And then after that, we'll be off for a little while.
Sounds good. All right. Thanks very much.